Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema.
What's poppin', people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in your earholes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
Cilantro!
On today's episode, we will be talking about The Witch. This is a 2015 film directed by Robert Eggers and stars Anya Taylor-Joy, Ralph Ineson, and Kate Dickey. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. A family in 1630s New England is torn apart by the forces of witchcraft, black magic, and possession. Here is an original song to support the synopsis.
Witches be bitches that float in the night. Witches be bitches that cause quite the fright. Evil forces invading thy throat. Be wary of Philip the Black Devil Goat.
Be wary of Philip the Black Devil Goat.
Let's start with some facts about the film. Most of the film's dialogue and story were based on writings from the time. Thoughts?
That sort of Shakespearean construct, that old sort of English.
Yeah, I was a bit bemused that the story specifically could have happened, even close to how the film pans out.
The supernatural elements couldn't have, but the fear is correct. Because if you look at the Crucible 60 years before, that's what they fear is the result of witches. But obviously in the Crucible, there's no such thing as witches.
Yeah.
It's a way of controlling people, I think.
I just find it alarming that society ever could think that a woman was evil based on how they acted. It's like almost an excuse to be idiots towards them.
Well, it was like reading the stars and seeing signs, wasn't it? Like if you see two birds, something bad's happened. A black cat represents the devil. Like they killed, millions of black cats were murdered in that century.
Really?
They thought they were witched. The devil's like animals.
That's madness. That's something I can never get my head around, is the beliefs of civilizations gone by and societies and stuff.
It was their first attempt at understanding the world.
But it's a poor attempt, right? So yeah. If someone had had bad hay fever and had a sneezing fit, the go-to reaction wouldn't be, oh, she probably, something's got up her nose. It'd be, oh, that's devil. That's devil worship.
Mm. And the thing is, it was just whoever got to accusing first was believed pretty much.
Yeah.
With the Crucible, that's what it's all about. It's rumours and how dangerous it is for gossip in that sort of society.
Yeah.
That's a subtext for McCarthyism, isn't it? Crucible. Witch hunt, 60s. For communism. This film's set 60 years before, and it shows you, it's almost a great prequel to Crucible, even though they're not linked, because one's supernatural and one isn't. But the fear in the Crucible, if you wanted to get an idea of what they were scared of, I'd watch The Witch.
Yeah.
Because it's good at giving you that full picture.
I just find it mad that there's texts out there from, what, the 17th century?
Yeah.
That talk about the belief of witches, the plight of those accused and stuff, and the fact they use that to make a film, I do find fascinating.
Oh, it's mad.
I'd love to read the text in which this is based on. I'd like to know how much of it is based on whatever these texts were. But I certainly feel something's added to the film as a whole, knowing that it's directly influenced by real transcripts and real events.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought that was quite cool. The film was shot in only 25 days. Again, I think that's absolutely mad.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's only a 90-minute runtime, but you've got child actors in there, you've got animals, you've got peril, you've got these great shots of the weather and the desolate landscape that they're living in. And the fact that all of these things aligned and they can shoot such a polished final product in less than a month seems mad to me.
I think that's to do with Jarian Blaschke, the cinematographer, because he also did Lighthouse. And he got an Oscar. No, he got nominated for an Oscar for Best Cinematography. And in The Witch, so he's worked with Robert Eggers three times, I think, even in The Northman. But the way he used natural light and everything, like he's excellent at what he does. That might have helped shave some days off filming.
Yeah, another sort of side fact that I read, apparently all of the shots, or a very vast majority of them, was used with natural lighting.
Yeah.
Very little was used with like fake lights or anything like that. It was all the surroundings in which they filmed.
Yeah, I love that though. The twilight, it's like the perfect hours to film a movie because of the way the light is. So the sun is maybe 4 o'clock, five. I don't know, where the sun's just about gone, but there's enough light in the sky to give the director and the cinematographer exactly what they need to do the film. So that's probably why it's 25 days, because it was such a strict regimented schedule to get the light.
Yeah.
And work off of the cycle of the sun.
Mm, nice. Yeah, I applaud anything that can have such a quick turnaround in terms of production. And the film doesn't necessarily feel rushed. I didn't watch the film and think, oh, I wish they'd spent longer making it. I mean, that would be a really weird feeling to have towards a film. But yeah, I for one was impressed that it was done in such a short time.
Mm-hmm.
My final fact is Stephen King, who is often called the master of horror, has stated that he was terrified by this film. That has to be the highest accolade to anyone making horror films, right?
Huge compliment, yeah. I think I've covered it before, but Stephen King's, the depth of his work is much better than, say, some of them cheesy 80s films that came out, like Pet Sematary and Cujo and stuff. And that he's done so much more, and he writes characters excellently. So for him to turn around and look at this film and go, it scared me, I think that's great. If I saw that on the front of a DVD, you know, not so much Empire Total Film 5-star, but if I saw Stephen King, terrifying, that's a great lure for me.
Yeah.
I love his story. I love his history. I love how he got into writing, how he struggled as a janitor. And for him to like be probably one of the greatest modern day writers ever.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
I feel personally that I've leveled up to hear like the daddy of horror say that this film rocked him. I wasn't necessarily terrified. So I consider I've grown in strength that I could handle a film that the daddy of horror was terrified by.
It's disturbing, isn't it?
Yeah.
More so than, like, I'm not a big fan of slashers, apart from the original Halloween. I think there's value in Halloween. But, like, unlike a slasher, it's more of a mental stress, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's quite disturbing in a way. It builds, and then I think, like, that last 20 minutes, it does a great job at being a horror.
I'd be very interested to hear what Stephen King's favourite things about the film were. I'd also be interested to hear what your favourite things about the film were.
Yeah, well, similar to what I just said a moment ago, exactly the same, actually. Jarin Blaschke's cinematography. I've seen it on a few occasions, like Lighthouse. Excellent. Again, that's another film where a lot of natural light was used, or like from a torch or something, to illuminate the actor's face. And the way that Blaschke uses like filters, natural light, I really enjoy like what he does in a film. And I think with this film, it's very grim.
Yeah.
Because of how well he's worked, you know, the camera setup and the filters and the way he draws natural light. And I think that's why he got an Oscar nomination for Lighthouse, because you can't not look at Lighthouse and think, out of all the films, say, that year or years prior, nothing looked like Lighthouse.
No.
Nothing. No. One thing being colourful and beautiful like Avatar, and it's all greens and blues, but to take a film and do the opposite.
Yeah, to find beauty in such a simple palette, black and white palette like The Lighthouse, I think you're right. It is striking.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly agree that this film as well is very aesthetically pleasing, even though it is really unsettling.
Mm.
And the events that unfold aren't nice to see.
There's nothing warm about it, is there?
Not
and that's executed really well.
Yeah. And I think the cinematography certainly plays a part in that as well. What else did you like about it?
I think the British accent is one of the hardest for an actor who's not native to England to convey. And I think Anya Taylor-Joy did an excellent job with a Yorkshire accent.
See, I think she is English.
Is she?
I believe she's English. Or I think she's...
Well, you've put a spanner in the works now, baby. I'm going to have to go check that dog out.
Check that out. But I think she's English, or she has English parents or something. I heard somewhere that she's excellent at picking up accents and stuff. So if she isn't English, then that's a great shout, because she's
born in the United States.
Oh, wow.
She won several accolades, including Golden Globe Award and Screen Actors Guild Award.
Oh, 1-0 to you then. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you think about other performances from non-England-born actors trying to do an English accent, it's difficult. Mm. And it's very obvious when it's not executed. And it could work other ways, but I think for Anna Taylor-Joy to step in against the voice of England, Ralph Ineson, and Kate Dickey, who I think might be a Scottish actress, but to stand toe-and-toe with these you know, stalwarts of British accent and language. I think she did excellent. Really, really, really good accent.
Yeah, I was genuinely under the impression that she was English, and I thought maybe she had to put a northern twang on her voice. But hearing that she's American, definitely that deserves huge accolades because she was great.
Yeah, because you didn't pick up like, ooh, that's a bit off.
Yeah.
Ooh, Russell Crowe, Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Please.
I mean, I have to admit, I've not necessarily been the biggest fan of Anya Taylor-Joy since she sort of blasted onto the scene. But I found some of her performances I've seen her. I saw her in
Split,
New Mutant. I saw her in a couple of the later series of Peaky Blinders. And I personally thought in those performances, she has a tendency to overact. But in this film where she's effectively the lead, I think, considering the film is a horror and you would expect it to be a more outlandish, screamy affair, I thought it was quite a muted performance from her, and now learning that accent isn't her own, I've got a newfound respect.
Mm. I think watching her in Queen's Gambit and Split, I definitely enjoy her screen presence.
Yeah.
Very emotional with the way she acts and stuff. She's good. She's quite a patient actress, I think. Would disagree a little on the overacting. I haven't seen The Mutants. What film are we talking
New
about?
Mutants. To be honest, the whole film
Teenage Mutant Ninja?
No.
Turtle?
It was like a Marvel spin-off, I think, that was in production for like 4 years. Then it kept getting pushed back, and they had to go in and edit it. And the final product was an absolute train wreck. And considering, as I mentioned earlier, she's got a reputation of being really good with accents, she plays a Russian character. And granted, she's not helped by the film being really poorly written, directed, and executed. The whole film is a shambles. When there is a performance that off-putting, that's the one that kind of sticks. So I'm willing to accept if I'm wrong, and she's at the start of a very large and successful career, and I'm happy to be proved wrong. I did see her in Last Night in Soho, the latest Edgar Wright film in that.
Yes.
And I think she was outperformed by the joint lead, who's played by Thomasin McKenzie. But even in that one, I don't know if I went into that one with having an unfair opinion of Anya Taylor-Joy, but I found her a bit grating in that. But this film, she certainly, grew on me, definitely. Do you have anything else you really enjoyed about the film?
Yeah, I really enjoyed some of the imagery sort of gave way to some sort of subtext. And there was a couple of things that I picked up whilst watching it. And I thought, when Thomasin says to her dad, all you can do is cut wood. And when you think about it in the film, he's seen cutting wood maybe 3 or 4 times. And I thought that might be akin to the mythology of Sisyphus. He was sort of put in a limbo by Zeus. And what he had to do was roll a boulder to the top of a hill. And every time he'd get to the top of the field, it'd roll back down, and he did it for eternity. And I thought that was like Ralph Ineson with chopping the wood. And it's like he continuously has to do it, even though like he's got wood. You can see the pile of wood that he's got. He just keeps doing it because he can't do anything else. I thought there was maybe a layer of Greek mythology in there. And then obviously there's a scene in it where Caleb, who's the oldest son in the family, he throws up an apple that's been bitten. I thought that might be subtext for the whole forbidden fruit and the Garden of Eden. Yeah, there's some people contest that the apple doesn't represent sex.
Yeah.
With the Bible, they say it's not related. It's just forbidden fruit, don't touch it. And it was more about obey my rules.
Mm.
But I prefer the sex one.
Yeah.
And I do think it, because Caleb's character in this film, he's sort of going through puberty. And there's quite a brave scene where he's observing his older sister's bust while she's asleep, isn't it?
Yeah.
And even she sort of laughs when she catches him looking down by the river in one scene.
Yeah.
And then later on when he approaches this witch's hut, who's now this extremely beautiful Spanish-looking woman, he's very drawn in by her bust. So a lot of it could be subtext or like allegory for like the Bible and Greek mythology. I like that imagery.
I think that's something that's prevalent in all of Edgar's films. And I think if you're someone who likes to look a bit deeper into the meaning of things, I think there's plenty of food for thought in each of his films. I think there's plenty on show in The Witch as well. I didn't look at it as deeply as you in terms of the father played by Ralph Ineson chopping the wood. I thought it was something he did out of frustration because everything else he couldn't do. Mm-hmm. So he couldn't protect his youngest child from getting taken. He couldn't grow crops. He felt like he was doing everything wrong, and the only thing he could do was chop the wood.
So almost like a punishment, though.
Yeah. So, I mean...
only because of Edgar's track record.
Yeah, I would not be...
sea curse.
I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest if it was deeply rooted in other meanings. And I find it fascinating that you have pinpointed that out, because I love to hear that sort of thing.
Only on my third watch.
Films. So. Yeah. Well, I've watched it twice, and I will definitely need to watch it again. As with all of Eggers' films, it demands multiple viewings.
Yep.
I think my favourite thing about The Witch was how the horror was subtle. Now, I'm not a fan of horror films at all. I'm a real tart when it comes to scary content, particularly if it's anything to do with possession or the devil or evil spirits. I was raised as a Catholic, so that shit's ingrained into me. Like, it's the most, it's terrifying. Even now, I couldn't sit and watch like Paranormal Activity, or I'd struggle to watch The Exorcist.
Spiders or possession?
What, would I rather be a spider or would I rather be possessed?
Would you rather watch a film where the focus point is spiders or possession? Come on.
You know what? It'd probably be possession.
Cool.
But I'd have to watch it early in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that just shows how much I really fucking hate spiders. Yeah, I liked that this was a level of horror that I could handle, but it was able to be subtle but still effective. So I braced myself for jump scares, but Eggers and Co. are far more sneaky in supplying their startles. It's more suggestible terror than in-your-face fear, and because of that, I found the whole experience really unsettling and uncomfortable rather than, like, terrifying. And it's one of those films, I think you watch it and you let it rest, and it sort of creeps in. And my immediate thinking afterwards was, oh, that wasn't that scary. Then later on in the day, the next day, certain scenes and certain parts that I started tying together, the more I thought about it, the more it did grow on me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while I don't necessarily like horror films, I like any film that makes you think days after the viewing. So I did appreciate that about it. I also really enjoyed how talented the young members of the cast were. I often find child actors distracting. It's not their fault, but sometimes children can lessen a scene due to their age and just basic lack of life experience.
Mm-hmm.
But the three kids in this were brilliant, particularly Harvey Scrimshaw, who plays Caleb. Yeah, who excels in some really troubling and disturbing scenes. Thought for such a young man to portray such terror. And then there's a scene where he returns after going missing in the woods for a while, and it becomes apparent that he's being bewitched.
Mm-hmm.
He's been possessed by something. And they get him home, and he's comatosed, and then he suddenly wakes up. And the range of emotion this young lad shows, it goes from pure terror to then again to silence. Then to almost...
It's like seductive at one point.
Yeah, like a euphoric sense of, oh, I understand what's happening, but there's an end to this. Then there was an acceptance, and it felt like he'd be at peace. And it's a 2, maybe 3 minute scene. And I was overwhelmed at how he tackled that. Because I think well-established, well-respected adult actors couldn't portray that range of emotion. And I thought he was superb. All the kids in this were really good. Like, I don't know how you would get children to act in a film that is so disturbing. I guess they don't necessarily understand the connotations and the context.
Twins are excellent.
Yeah, they all are.
Creepy.
Yeah.
The little twin looks like a little Fred West.
Yeah.
A right little Gloucestershire, like,
I found guy. It amazing that these young actors could be cute and absolutely terrifying. And the way it ebbs and flows between the two, I think with lesser talent, with lesser director, I think the children in a film could really be distracting. But I thought they were brilliant. So
come and play with us, Danny.
Yeah, ooh, gives me chills. My final thing I liked about it is just a personal thing, and it's another horror in the bag. I've watched another horror film, so I consider that a positive because I don't tend to touch them.
Do you take that bag on a hike with you, bury it in the hills, and then walk away?
I try to.
Mm.
But then sometimes I'll hear a rap-a-tap tap on the door, and there's the bag again.
It came back.
Yeah, that's what happens with me in horrors. I've got quite a vivid imagination, and when I watch things, especially paranormal with possession and stuff, I find it very hard to close the chapter on it. And even like trash horror like Sinister or Insidious, where people laugh.
Jump scares.
I went to see Us in the cinema, the Jordan Peele film.
Mm-hmm.
So many people in that cinema were laughing at it. I did not sleep that night. And I know, I'm well aware that it's not considered a scary film, but that's how low my intolerance for horror films is. So the fact that I sat through this like a big boy and managed to watch it, I applaud my own efforts, and that's a positive.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that film. I think the most disturbing part of it is that they're eating these albino white rabbits.
Mm.
And I think just my palate and the way I'm imagining what it tasted like, and that's the only thing that I took from that film.
Yeah.
You know, I can't get scared from a film when at one point they're going, I got five on it. Can't.
See, that song planted in my head and I associated it with terror. So when I couldn't sleep that night, I'm well aware how dramatic this sounds. I couldn't sleep that night. I kept hearing that song. There was certain scenes in there that were really striking to me personally. I really struggled. And I watched it with my other half and I was like, oh, that was fucked up, wasn't it? And she was like, no.
I thought her voice characterization was shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, come on.
See, that
less is more in horror, and it always has been.
Well, maybe that's why The Witch works more for you than us.
Oh, that was cool. I mean, you're more for you than us.
Oh, double-edged core.
Yeah.
What elements didn't you like about the film?
You know, sometimes when you've got a dislike, but it's hard to justify because there are elements to it that you liked, but maybe in throughout the whole film it was a bit obvious. But for me, that Shakespearean construct, I felt, maybe have interfered with... Who plays Caleb? What's his name? Scrimshaw.
Harvey Scrimshaw.
I feel like that sort of dialogue stopped him, or at least held him back from acting through dialogue. So it's one thing saying your line and then acting through that line. So I found with him in some scenes, when he's conversing with his sister Thomason, it sounded very, I'm reading lines.
Okay.
He did, like, because sometimes if the little twins act in this and their dialogue is not, if you listen to it again, you watch this film again, listen to the twins, their dialogue's not Shakespearean construct. It's not Old English. It's much more basic, more out of the way we would talk today. But obviously Caleb, Thomason and the parents all talk in that Shakespearean construct. And I found the way he had to do it in some scenes, not his possession scene, that was perfect.
Mm.
He did that really well. But in the earlier scenes, it just didn't sound right.
But isn't the language used, isn't that reflective of the time period?
Yeah, but if you watch Innocent in it, his reactions and actions with the dialogue, they run concurrently right next to each other. He can act through the dialogue. I found if you're a young kid, taking an old English and then trying to act that scene is a lot harder because there's, you know, Ralph Innocent's had 50 years of acting.
And also he understands the context behind it. He understands that it's Shakespearean language.
Yeah.
It must be hard to translate to a young child that this is how they speak. Mm. So in that sense, I guess it would be a struggle. I didn't see it as being a problem, but I'm glad that you've highlighted it because it is food for thought.
Yeah. It was just something I noticed in the earlier scenes. It just made it harder to believe him.
And I wonder if I go back and watch it a third time, if I'll pick that up, and I wouldn't be surprised if I did.
Maybe.
Is there anything else about the film that you didn't agree with, didn't like?
More of a personal thing, kind of like you and your possession horror movie.
Yeah.
But mine was like twins. I don't like twins.
They creep you out.
They creep me out. Even before I watched The Shining, something very odd about the way that they stare together and the way that they sort of creep me out.
So it's the concept of twins that make you uncomfortable.
I think the way films have portrayed twins...
Yeah.
Has always made it a bit of a weird thing for me. Like, obviously, Shining did a great job of putting two twins at the end of a hallway. Come and play with us, Danny.
Yeah.
No, mess me up.
Uh-uh.
It was up there with Reagan from The Exorcist for me. I've always had issues with twins.
Yeah.
And these twins are no different. One of the little fuckers looks like Fred West, and the other one's so annoying, running around singing about Black Phillip all the time. They creep me out.
They were creepy in the film.
They are creepy.
They're not identical twins. But if you've got a... like you say, if you're not anti-twins, but if there's something about twins that ruffles you up the wrong way, how they're so sort of...
If I found out I was having twins, I'd start signing papers to get rid of one of them.
Wow.
No, I mean like send them somewhere.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's fair.
I couldn't deal with that. Maybe I'd alternate them. Yeah. I have one for 6 months, the other one come around for 6 months.
That seems
creep me out, man.
That seems fair.
If I woke up and I could hear like... I came down the hallway and there's two of them standing there... Daddy! I would shit a brick.
But I would be terrified if just one child was doing that.
Twins worse.
Twins would be worse. Where do you stand on triplets or quadruplets then? It's a no-go.
Triplets, fine.
But twins are not?
No.
But so three's fine too, no?
Yeah.
Okay, well now I've learned something about you and I like that.
Good.
Thank you for sharing.
It's all right, man. And it's with triplets as well. You could make up at least a three-piece Police Trevor tribute cover band. With a duo... No
Simon
way.
And Garfunkel.
No, I don't like them.
Moss Bros.
No.
Okay.
Moss Bros. The suit company that support Bros in their later years.
Yes. What do you have anything else you didn't like about the film? Was it just restricted to twins?
I think I would have liked to have seen more of the witch.
Yeah.
She has I think she has in total maybe two times on screen. You see her hand as, so in this film, Early Doors Thomason, who's played by Anya Taylor-Joy, takes the newborn baby to the river to play with it, and she's going, peekaboo, peekaboo, and she closes her eyes and stuff. And then on the third one, the baby's gone, and she looks up, and there's just this little bush moving.
I'd like to interject.
Do so on your own peril, good sir. Thou thanst mine father.
Okay, that scene you're speaking of, did you hear the little clippity-cloppity goat hooves running off into the distance?
I'm going to need to watch this a fourth time.
That hit me the first time. Mm-mm. And like when it got to the second time, I sort of busied my ears. I just white noised myself because I didn't want to hear it. Because that shit, even though it's so subtle, as you painted the scene out perfectly, she's there playing with her little brother and the little baby disappears and you see nothing, no trail of evidence. And then you hear the little tippy taps of goat hoofs and I was like, fuck that.
I just looked behind me.
What, to see if there was a goat?
I just felt a bit weird.
Or twins. Or twin goats.
Twins with goaty hoof feet.
No, I don't want to think about that. Thank you.
Yeah. So the baby gets stolen, taken into the woods. And within the first 15 minutes, you just see this very weathered hand touching a naked newborn, like on a stone slab. And then the knife comes out and it implies that the baby's been killed. And then like, what, 2 minutes later, it's like there's just bone and tissue getting mashed in a pestle and mortar, and then this witch rubs it all over a tainted, wrinkly body. That's the first time you see her, and then the next time you see her is much later in the film, closing act pretty much, and they wake up in this little shed because Ralph Ineson's William's totally lost it, and he's put all his kids in the cupboard because, again, it's like hysteria, and they come to, and this old, weathered, love-handled, wrinkly granny sucking the teat of a goat.
Burr.
And that's disturbing imagery.
Yeah.
And when she just turns around and laughs, even better, because if she was to turn around and go,
yeah,
cheap, she turned around and went, that's fucking creepy, Amir.
Yeah. I think, like you said earlier, less is sometimes more in horror. And I would argue that the mere suggestion of an evil presence or a witch-like figure is enough to establish the horror. But it does kind of tie into things that I didn't like about, because you have to put a lot of the pieces together. And the absence of the witch, as you say, I think a little more presence, but not too much, could have helped the film along a bit.
Do you know what's hard? I think, like, you know, when they refer to like the Trinity, Jesus Christ, the God and the Holy Spirit.
Father, Son and the Holy Spirit.
Father, Son and the Holy Spirit. So, and they say they are actually all the same.
Yeah.
So say God is Jesus, Jesus the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Is this the same with the devil? So in this film, you've got Black Philip, who's a goat, supposed to be the embodiment of Satan. You also see a Satan-type character in the last moment of the film with like leather jacket, cufflinks and stuff, and he's all like, hello. And you've got the witch. Are they all the same or are they individual?
Again, that's a wonderful observation that has come from maybe three viewings of the film and knowing it's an Eggers piece of work, looking a bit deeper. But I wouldn't be surprised if there was something in that.
Egg! Yeah. So that was, that was a dislike. And I took distaste towards Black Philip. I did some work on a farm once, work experience. And my moments with goats was where I had to move them from one pen to another. I got them in this pen, fair enough, and then I realised I had to go and put the food tray in there for them, or their seed, or whatever it was there. And I opened the gate, and they just barged me and all ran past. And it took me 2 hours to get them back in this pen. And when I got back to the farmer guy, it was like, goats are the bastards of the animal world. And ever since that day, I've realised I can see why people thought they were the devil, or why in old context or text that religious people would consider them a devil's physical being on earth.
Yeah.
Kind of like a jackal and stuff, the way they look at certain animals. Yeah. So goats, I can see why, because their eyes are lifeless and they taste really good.
Yeah, well, that's a perfect segue into elements of the film that I didn't like, because top of my list is Black Philip, that fucking goat man. I had no opinion on goats whatsoever before this film, but I'm kind of scared of them now. It was if the goat knew he was meant to be scary, and I thought he was shifty as fuck throughout. And I never realised it before, and I probably sound a bit stupid, but it's the pupils in goats that are like rectangle or something.
Mm-hmm.
That shook me up. I can't say that I've ever looked deeply into a goat's eyes, but you kind of do in this film, and that just the shape of the pupils, I was like, ugh.
God doesn't draw in straight lines.
That's wonderful. But I'd agree with that, definitely top of my list. That goat, on some of the facts I was reading, apparently he was an absolute nightmare. The goat, the actor. was an absolute fucking arsehole. And there was, they intended, Eggers intended to use the goat a lot more in the film, but he was so difficult that he could only use him for the few scenes in. And in the few scenes, I thought Black Phillip turned in a fantastic performance. I thought he was great.
It's excellent. He was patient. He let his character build and he gave you a good idea about, you know, his upbringing and stuff.
Yeah. Very interesting character art for said goat. But yeah, I found it creepy. And yeah, that's the main thing that sort of stayed with me is Black Phillip. I just found him a real menace.
It's clever how they did that. It's like in Paranormal Activity when they put talcum powder on the floor to see if anything actually has come in their room. And when they do observe it the next morning, it's hoofs. And that's just one of them things. that's more effective than when in Paranormal Activity, she just gets dragged across the room because that's very obvious horror. But the horror that, like you were saying, sticks with you, that jet stream, that residue, into the next day, it's like, oh, that's odd.
Well, it's the hooves are synonymous with like the devil.
Yeah. It's odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
And there's that breakdown into also certain Christian, like Judeo-Christian, like diets as well. Like you do not eat of a hoofed animal.
I'm not sure, I would not be surprised.
Because they're dirty or something.
I would not be surprised. The second element I wasn't a fan of the film was the lack of closure. The witch does a great job at creating an unsettling atmosphere that sort of keeps its audience guessing. But there were questions left unanswered, and some scenes seemed to be purely about the cinematography rather than relevant to the plot itself. I like the ambiguity, but just a little more explanation would have gone a long way for me.
Do you think that's because it was directional debut and it was more of a showcase?
I think the whole film is what's
question mark
suggestible. Yeah, it's not necessarily what you see, it's what you don't see. It's things that are going on in the background. It's what you come up with through your own viewing experience. And I do like films that do that, because you watch a film and then you talk about it with someone who's also seen it, and you both have different opinions, different perspectives, and I like that about
Lighthouse. Lighthouse was similar, wasn't it?
But yeah, definitely
more striking to watch, full of question marks,
yeah,
full of subtext, and then you sort of left, well,
yeah, and dependent on the individual, you could watch it with six people and there could be six different conclusions. Thought it meant this, thought it meant that. And I think there's a lot of that in The Witch. A scene that springs to mind is the one that you spoke of, that very early on in the film, where we get a glimpse of this, the witch, the culprit of the child snatching. And when she's in this lit up room with candles and firelight and stuff like that, and she's sort of menacingly like massaging the baby before you then see her killing the innocent infant or whatever.
Making chili.
Yeah. And then it sort of cuts and she's sort of lying on the floor as if she's come to, and it's all distorted. And I didn't really understand what that meant. And I know it's probably kind of symbolic.
Like a serial killer ritual, isn't it? Where they say, like, they go back to the scene of a crime and they lay on the floor and they...
But then I
speak in scrambled words and stuff.
Yeah. And then I thought, did the witch have to kill an infant, someone of innocence, to grow in power, to be able to possess other members of the family? It was all left very open-ended. And that was a common theme throughout the film. And when a film is in such a short runtime, to have so many unanswered questions, it did feel, for me personally, like I would have liked a bit more context. Not my hand held throughout, but just a little more like, oh, so that's what that means. And I found, there was maybe a few too many of those sort of scenes that left me scratching my head a little
bit.
I think
you're right. He wants people to go away questioning it, feeling weird about it. Well, you know, why? Because then that leaves that weird... It's that weird sort of area, isn't it? Where if you're on your own making a cup of tea in a day and you've just watched that film, you might be a bit like, ooh, creeped out.
I think maybe the brilliance of Robert Eggers' works lies in the fact that he might not necessarily have the answers. So we may debate it, or what does that mean? What does this mean? He might not know. He's just done it. And then it's like, it's getting people talking. Then I've done my job. That's fantastic. So I think there's a level of
That's good if there's a reason behind it. Like if it's on a subject like racism, religion, war, you know, transphobia, all of that stuff, that's fine, because then they're talking about something that we can grasp. It's got texture. But something like witches,
yeah,
I'm gonna go down the pub now and talk to them about, you know we need to talk about this. Yeah,
witches, man,
you know, it's gone too far.
Yeah. No, it's a fair point, but for me, a little more would have gone a long way. And I think if you are a fan of Eggers' work, you probably lean into that. You probably, if you like what he does, you'd probably be a defensive. I'm on the fence when it comes to Eggers. I'm not sure if I like his work or if I'm sort of indifferent to it at the moment. But as I've mentioned, you certainly have to watch his films more than once. And that leads into my final dislike about the film. And it is pure and simple. I don't know how I feel about it. I just don't know. It's well made. It's creepy. It's atmospheric. I've watched it twice and I still don't know if I think it's a good film or a bang average one.
And you're watching it twice, maybe even a third time, because you want to see if there's more to it.
Yeah. And in terms of doing a podcast about the film, it makes it quite difficult if, as someone talking about it, you don't necessarily know what you think about it. But again, if you're a Eggers purist, you'd be like, well, that's the whole point. It gets you chatting. You're not meant to know. So, yeah, I probably will watch this one again. Not in any time soon, but I definitely watch it again to try and pick up some more bits and pieces.
And sometimes it's the subject matter, isn't it? So if you look at it, there is closure in a sense that Anna Taylor-Joy's character, Thomason, everything she did have or hold dear is gone. So what comes to her door first, it's Black Phillip and it's the devil. And it's like, you're in the arse end of nowhere.
Yeah,
there's no one here. What can, you know, and it was almost like her only choice now was to join this weird cult of devil worship.
Well, it's take my hand or die alone of starvation in here, isn't it?
So you get a closure in a sense that she walks into the woods, there's these other naked witches and they all float up into the sky and she laughs. And essentially she's signed the devil's book and she's joined him. But is that memorable? Does that make you think this is a good film? But it's not. It's just weird. It's creepy.
That's what I mean. When a film has you second guessing your own opinion, I think you look at it one of two ways. You can think, well, it must mean it's good, or you can look at it the other way and go, no bollocks to that. Like, I want to know what I think about a film. I should know after watching a film if I liked it or not. I think it's dependent on the individual, and I think, thinking about it now after you saying that, maybe the whole point of what happened to that whole family was to get Anya Taylor-Joy to
break her down,
to join the witchhood. Maybe that was the motive of Black Phillip and the Satan that resided in him, but you don't know.
Well, they say, don't they, that there's they say, I love that expression.
Yeah,
they like, there's a group of people somewhere in a mountain that literally sit there and say all this stuff. It's been quite spoke about that dark forces and demons and devils are attracted to negativity or negative energy. So obviously with them struggling to get a harvest, living in this arse end nowhere, innocent, obviously struggling to provide for his family, could have been letting that gate open for the devil to get in. And obviously it attracted itself to the children, much like Reagan in The Exorcist, because of the way Reagan talks to Captain Howdy up in the loft. Creepy just to hear that. Who the fuck's Captain Howdy? Black Phillips, you're Captain Howdy in this. And the way that it's the kids that are whispering and talking to the goat.
Yeah.
That's horrible. I hated that bit.
Susceptible.
Yeah, whispering in ear. Well, it's like inviting a vampire in, isn't it? They've got to get in somehow. And the kids with a sort of key to their door.
Well, yeah, they've got an innocence and they don't know they probably shouldn't be conversing with a goat. Whereas an adult would be like, you should not be talking to me, Black Phillip. You are a goat.
I don't like Black Phillip. Especially when he's doing nothing and just sitting there and looking like this.
It's the rectangle pupils for me, man.
Does not draw in straight lines.
But that's fine, but he does do pupils in circles, and goats have rectangle pupils, and I do not like it.
Is this confirmed? Can I just check that? Because I'm intrigued after you said it.
I'm sure, well, I saw rectangle pupils. Maybe it's something wrong with my own pupils.
No, you're right. There is something odd about their eyes, rectangle pupils.
It's not even necessarily the pupils.
According to eight sources, there's just this three-letter word, yes.
There you go. Confirmed, asked and answered.
Well, goats are herbivores and need to be able to protect themselves when a predator comes along. A broad line of sight aided by wide rectangular-shaped pupils allows them to see danger approaching from their peripheral vision and prepares them to get the telly ready on time for Coronation Street.
You can put all the science you want and their willingness to be home for Coronation Street behind it. I still don't trust it and I don't like it.
I don't like it. That's why I think they taste fucking amazing in a goat curry or curry goat.
Okay. I have some questions. Would you like them?
Yeah, man.
Were you scared by the film?
Yeah, there are certain scenes. So we've discussed one, coming to in the little shed and looking at this shrouded, dirty old witch suckling from a goat's tit. That's quite disturbing. Second scene, the mother, played by Kate Dickey, awakes in the night and sees her dead son, Caleb. Caleb dies in the film. just in case you wanted to know.
Yep.
And he's holding the dead baby that was also taken and turned into Chili Con Carne.
Mm-hmm.
Kiddie, she then thinks she's breastfeeding.
Kiddie Con Carne.
Kiddie Con Carne. She then thinks she's breastfeeding Kiddie Con Carne. And then in typical Eggers fashion, boom, cutscene, and it's actually a crow just eating away at her nipple, and she's just cackling. That's disturbing.
Yeah, that's nasty.
That made me feel a bit, oh,
yeah, fudge. And the euphoria that Kate Dickie's character has while she thinks she's breastfeeding her recently deceased baby,
mm-hmm.
that makes it so much creepier as well, because she's almost giddy with laughter when you've got a bloody crow pecking at her nip.
Yeah.
That was nasty.
Highly disturbing, very visual, very haunting.
Yeah.
And no jump scenes. Oh, actually, I did jump when Innocent's looking at the shed where he has locked up his kids. And obviously, he wakes up in the morning, there's a goat in half, not Black Phillip, but one white goat's cut in half and the shed's blown to pieces and Anna Taylor-Joy's on the floor and he's staring at it. And then it doesn't really give you a moment to take that in, and Black Phillip just gauls him with his horn. And it made me jump because I had the TV on loud.
That's textbook Black Phillip, wasn't it?
Cold from side. Dirt. Like a Scottish Premier League defender.
Yeah. Robert Eggers is making a huge name for himself as one of Hollywood's most exciting directors. He has a unique style, and each of his films are a result of a very individual style and original vision. Do you think he should branch out and try his hand at something completely different, or carry on developing his own brand of visually disturbing, perspective-dividing cinema?
If you can find ways to keep it exciting, I think he could stick to his The series. That's unofficial, by the way. No one calls them the series except me.
The trilogy.
The trilogy so far.
Yeah.
The Northman.
I admire the fact that he's got such a tunnel vision and all his films have got a very unique style. I think you can correlate between the three of them and you can see the similarities, similar tone, similar subject matter, deeper meaning, all of this. And I admire when a director comes in, and Northman was his first big studio production.
Yeah.
And he managed to keep that independent sense of identity in a bigger scale. And I applaud that. I would like to see him try something different that is a little bit less open-ended and a little bit more closed up, and you know what's going. Mm-hmm. A simple three-act film where you know there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. With no air of uncertainty. I'd like to see how he did a more straightforward project.
I think it'd be hard for him to top what he achieved with Lighthouse. But with Lighthouse, when I watch it, I'm fully appreciating the craft that's gone into making the film.
Mm.
Might not even be so much the film. It might be the artistic choices, you know, the use of language, excellent performance from William Dafoe, one of the best monologues I've seen in cinema.
Mm.
But is the film a good film? Like, for me to, can I actually walk away? It's a great film. I think it's a great filmmaker's film.
Yeah.
You get what I mean? And I think Lighthouse is still his strongest film.
I took more value from the Lighthouse out of the trilogy.
The trilogy?
Yeah. That's what everyone's calling it.
Everyone's been calling it the trilogy.
Yeah. Final question. Would you rather be stuck on your own in a lighthouse with Willem Dafoe's character from The Lighthouse?
That one.
Or stuck on a farm on your own with Black Phillip?
Lighthouse.
With a crazy, fart-smelly Dafoe.
Yeah, but there are moments in that film where they're having a laugh in it.
Yeah,
they've got whiskey and they're pissing around and joking. And if I don't go to the lighthouse, he's not going to come on me. I'll avoid that.
Well, you might not be able to. You're in very close quarters.
Not in the lighthouse. He's jacking off in the lighthouse to the lighthouse. If I don't go to the lighthouse, I don't have to put myself in that situation. And that place looks huge. I'd sleep somewhere else rather than listen to him fart throughout the whole film.
But yeah, in the lighthouse, there's the creepy light. There's the lack of food and getting boozed up. And there's a moment in the film where you think Pattinson and Defoe's characters are going to fuck.
There's lobster, bruh.
And yeah, there's lobster.
Lobster and whiskey.
But it's still unconfirmed whether the lobster was tasty or not.
You like me lobster.
I think, given the choice between the two, Black Phillip is effectively the devil. But you know that's what he is.
He's the devil's patronus.
Just stay out of his fucking way. And if you get on with Black Phillip, you could get all the treats that Satan can offer you. So it could be beneficial until you die, and then you spend eternity in hell.
You would take your chance with Black Phillip in possession.
I don't think
Willem Dafoe, a man, just a normal man.
But then, in the lighthouse, it's left open-ended. You don't know if
the devil's Dafoe, at play there.
If Dafoe is Robert Pattinson, he's there all on his own in complete isolation. Whereas Black Phillip, you know the evil. But yeah, weighing them all up, I'd probably choose being in a lighthouse with another man rather than on a farm.
Can't you throw Northman in the mixture?
A devil goat.
Because you just pick Northman, wouldn't you? Northern Lights, Icy Mountains.
Vikings.
Skull. Skier yogurt. I mean, yeah, skier yogurt.
So are you asking me, would I rather be in a lighthouse with a crazy Willem Dafoe?
Phallic shape.
A farm with a devil goat or in the Northern Lights with a skier yogurt?
Yeah.
Well, I take the skier yogurt. I like skier yogurts.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've cleared that up.
Yeah, me too. I'll join you.
Even though that wasn't the question, we have chosen skier yogurt.
Skier. A product of Iceland.
What would you rate The Witch out of 10?
7.5.
Oh, that's higher than I thought it would be.
I think there's value in it. It's a directional debut as well.
Yeah.
Debut? You know, I love Ralph Ineson. For a guy who I saw start off in Where the Heart Is and like Heartbeat, he was like, you know, he would do like British soaps and stuff. And I saw him in maybe First Night and The Office, you know, and just to see him like have this opportunity to show his acting prowess. And I don't think you can go wrong with Ralph Ineson in any sort of period drama or like pre-industrial England. I think he does. If you're going to do a medieval film or fantasy,
yeah,
he can fill them boots.
He suits it, doesn't he?
Yeah. And Dickie as well. Yeah. Scottish actress. She's excellent.
Listen, I rated it lesser than you. I would give it a 6
mm-hmm.
out of 10. As I say, the main reason for that is because I still don't know if I enjoyed the film. So that gives The Witch a total score of 13.5 out of 20, which isn't bad. I think if you like your horror films, if you like your horror films to make you think a little more and not just be jump out your seat, scary, then give this one a go. If you like possession films, if you like dickhead goats, then yeah, The Witch is probably the film for you. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed The Lighthouse, The Northman, and Kill List. Should we play a game?
Yeah, see.
The game in question is What the Plot, where the rules are simple and the results quite the opposite. Harry will conceive an original idea from his big and beautiful brain and give birth to a plot. It is then down to me to nurture this thought by providing a film title, genre, cast, and anything else I can think of to raise this brainchild into a fully functioning film concept. Over to you, Harry.
12th century, Spanish... What was it called? When they rounded people up and just...
Spanish Inquisition?
Spanish Inquisition, 12th century. Okay. Young farmhand boy. His mother is Spanish. His father is British. So he has a rather unique name. Juan Sanchez Pepper Thassanal.
Whoa. Hold on.
Don't try and spell that, dog.
Can I have that name again, please?
Juan. Sanchez. Pepper Thassanal.
Sounds like an IBS treatment.
That's the British part of his heritage.
Pepper Thassanal. Okay.
Juan Sanchez Pepper Thassanal, young farmhand, lives in Spain, 12th century, during the Spanish Inquisition.
And he's got a Spanish dad.
Spanish dad, English mum, let's say. Not really essential to the storyline, just that there is both in him. The film opens and he has witnessed the brutal religious judge, jury, executioner of his mother and father for devil worship during the Spanish Inquisition. He runs. So you open in part of the film, he's legging it. He's tormented. He's terrified. He's lost his family. And the reason that they were under scrutiny was because they were of Spanish and an English. That mix was focused on like just one of them bigotry type things that religion would have used to get its way in the movie. But what happens is our young Pepper Thassanal, he falls to his knees in the middle of like the Meseta, like this big barren area of land. And he prays to God to give him the strength and the power to get revenge. And this huge beam of light just shoots out in front of him. He believes it to be God. And this box falls in front of him. And he goes into a trance. And in this trance, he dreams of this humanoid type alien explaining to him how to use a weapon and how to take this certain medicine to make him strong. He wakes up in the morning and there's nothing there. It's desert, it's dirt, it's hot. And he looks at this box and he opens it. And what he dreamt in that trancey dream is true. There's a box and there's this alien blaster with unlimited rounds in it. There's medicine that will cure him of any disease that's incoming and make him strong and regenerative. And now it's 12th century Spanish Inquisition. This little farmhand's got a fucking futuristic super blaster and a way of curing any ailments or disease that would have killed him by the time he's 30. And that motherfucker's going on a revenge mission. He could change all of the time's problems that keep it back in the dark ages. That sort of, you know, that not hungering for real knowledge or thirst. This guy's got a fucking blaster. You can see him kicking down a church door or two and taking out some guys. Juan Sanchez Pepper Thassanol.
I'm impressed you remembered the surname.
Juan Sanchez Pepper Thassanol.
So sorry, that is a hell of a lot to digest. Right.
Not really.
Yes, I ran out of paper. Okay, so we've got a film set in the 12th century during the Spanish Inquisition. A young farmhand named Juan Sanchez Pepper Thassanol.
Pepper Thassanol
witnesses the execution of his parents for witchcraft. A light shines on him, a box falls on him, and aliens explain how
box falls on him.
How
he
to
dies,
be strong.
Film over.
So yeah, in the box is a futuristic weapon that enables this young lad to be able to seek vengeance on those that wronged him and his family.
It would change the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Because it would advance civilization as well, wouldn't it?
Okay. So, directing this film, which I see being a merge between drama and some odd...
Dramedy?
Drama and science fiction type historical mashup of madness.
Yeah. Maybe like Dusk Till Dawn, it's a crime and then it's a weird vampire film.
I think a wacky concept like this, someone like Pedro Almodovar would be a good director. He directed The Skin I Live In.
I love that film.
Parallel Mothers, Pain and Glory, very established, well-renowned director.
I'm impressed as well, because it could be a Spanish language film and that would probably be there.
Yeah. In the role of the parents, I'd have Pedro Pascal, who I think's been brilliant recently.
Excellent.
Yeah, Game of Thrones, The Mandalorian, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Narcos.
And his wife, English Rose in... Kate Winslet.
Oh,
so
yeah.
A more traditional English lady. She's as beautiful. As the mother. And I don't know who I would have playing the young farmhand Juan Sanchez Pepper Thassanol.
Juan Sanchez Pepper Thassanol.
I see it as being an undiscovered young talent that's given his chance to shine in a film that is frankly
not Harry Styles.
Bonkers. No.
Please.
It'd be of Spanish heritage.
Mm-hmm.
Someone that we haven't heard of, I think, would work in a film like this. Mm-hmm. For a title, I struggled with a title for this. My first
I wonder if you could do a one-word title.
Pepper Thassanol.
No, I can't spell it. I don't even know if it's a real name or word.
I would go with Pandora's Box because box lands from...
And you don't know what
you don't know what it is.
Can of worms.
Yeah.
That's good. Pandora's Box.
Pandora's Box, directed by Pedro Almodovar. I apologise if I haven't got that right. Starring an unknown young Spanish lad and Kate Winslet and Pedro Pascal.
There was a 1929 film called Pandora's Box. Would you like to change your option? Or you can have it, but it might need a subtitle. It might need an extended title, kind of like The Witch, a New England folktale. It might need an addition because people might think you're remaking this 1929 film.
Okay, I'll call it Pepper Thassanol's Box.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. I'm comfortable with my decision.
Pepper Thassanol's Box.
Yep.
We need to learn to spell that.
Yep.
Okay.
Matara a mi madre y a mi padre por ser impíos.
They killed my mother and father for being ungodly.
Obtendré mi venganza con un hombre sin oro.
I will get my vengeance with an ungodly weapon.
Mi nombre es Juan Sánchez Pepper Thassanol. Y este es mi caja.
My name is Juan Sánchez Pepper Thassanol, and this is my box.
Amen.